text consists of selected verses from the opening chapters of Genesis. And God said, "Let us make man in our image after our likeness." So God created man in his own image. And the serpent said unto the woman, "You shall not surely die. For God doth know that in the day ye eat thereof, then your eyes shall be opened, and ye shall be as God, knowing good and evil." This is our text. The biblical account of man's creation and his fall into sin contains a terrible irony. And I wonder if you've ever noticed it. The irony is this. The first man and woman, in a sense, tried to be what they already were. And in so doing, they sinned. Created in the image and likeness of God, Adam and Eve let Satan persuade them to be as God. Like God to begin with, our first parents endeavored to be like God. Of course, the irony depends upon a play on words. There's a world of difference between the likeness to God Adam and Eve are created with and the likeness to God they were looking for during the temptation. The one was good and the other bad. But it's curious that the same expression, likeness to God, covers both. It would appear that human speech itself reflects the human condition. That doubleness is possible in language because doubleness exists in people. That words can be contradictory because they're speaking as a contradictory combination of good and evil. Not only are our righteousnesses as filthy rags, but so are even our best expressions. Nowhere is this doubleness, this irony, more possible than in the ministry. Despite the loss of status that the clergy has suffered the past few decades, it is still true that most people regard the minister as someone more in the image and likeness of God than they themselves are. They expect a higher degree of sanctification from us. And their treatment of us is, for the most part, proportionate to that expectation, even when that expectation is all too frequently from disappointed. "Go right in, Reverend. It's okay," says the receptionist at the hospital desk during non-visiting hours. "Take it easy, Reverend," says the pupil indulgently as he tears up the ticket. "For you, sir, there will be a 10% discount," says the smiling salesman. "Please accept these passes with our compliments," the letter reads. "Would you lead us in prayer, Pastor?" is the request that was brought to our guide over and over during the early years of your ministry. People expect more from us, and they get it. Despite occasional disillusioning experiences with ministerial students during many years of contact with them, I'm still convinced that most ministerial hopefuls are a pretty decent lot. That, by the grace of God, and I mean that phrase, that's not pious or careless theological jargon, that, by the grace of God, ministerial candidates have often been endowed with a higher degree of sanctification than many people. And then it happens. They enter the ministry. In the image and likeness of God, in the good sense of that phrase, they begin to act in the image and likeness of God, in the bad sense of that phrase. Like God, by the grace of God, they begin to act as God through the sponsorship of Satan. They dictate, they dominate, they pontificate, they opinionate, they operate, they manipulate, they agitate. After more than 30 years divided between the preaching and teaching ministry, I am frankly appalled at the number of mystics one finds in both areas. And one wonders how the kingdom. kingdom survives. And then comes an even more appalling discovery. One himself is too often a mystic. Oh, a speaker may say this because he wants to avoid the charge of talking down from a pedestal. He may say it in the hope of identifying with his audience so that his message may thereby become more palatable. He may say it of himself so that then he has the right to say it of others. But he may also, by the grace of God, say it because again and again the ugly truth has hit him smack between the eyes. One himself is a mystic, and again one wonders how the kingdom survives. To be sure, the grace of hell will not prevail against his soul. But what about the shenanigans of her ministry? In most cases, I believe, we talk ourselves into deity. It's a professional habit. At first, we attempt a few timid sermons. To our utter amazement, people not only accept them, they even compliment them. We try again. Even better luck this time. Pretty soon, our sermons get 10 minutes longer, and of course, much louder. Next, we monopolize the meeting. Finally, we can't even converse socially anymore without preaching and orating and gesticulating. Well informed, we become encyclopedic dispensers of information. Whenever the parishioner puts in a nickel's worth of question, he gets a jackpot for an answer. Brethren, these things ought not so to be. And to keep that from being a merely pious work or legalistic moralizing, let's listen to St. Paul. What you put off concerning the former conversation, and that antiquated word for everyday living, conversation, is most apropos this morning. Take it in both senses, in the modern sense of talk, as well as in the ancient sense of behavior. What you put off concerning the former conversation, the old man, which is corrupt according to the deceitful lust, and be renewed in the spirit of your mind, and that you put on the new man, which after God is created in righteousness and true holiness. Christ's life, death, and resurrection have judged out the channel between God and us.